Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the conviction today of former Liberian President Charles Taylor on charges of war crimes and crimes against humanity. Amira Woods, the co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus, who is originally from Liberia, joins us to discuss how this mass murderer, who was sprung from a US prison by the CIA, only to end up as a protege of Gaddafi's running a murderous guns for diamond racket, was able to delay justice for so long. Then, as the president barnstorms across the country talking to students about how the Republican Ryan budget wants to double interest rates on student loans, we will speak with David Halperin, a senior fellow at Republic Report, where he has an exclusive article, Washington Post, Kaplan, and other for-profit colleges joined ALEC. We'll discuss the burgeoning taxpayer-funded for-profit college racket that recruits aspiring minorities and vets into penury with lifelong student loan debts, worthless diplomas, and no job prospects, all on your dime. Then finally, we'll speak with Steve Scroven, the organizer of a political comedy event for Public Citizen. He made An Unreasonable Man, the documentary on the life of the founder of Public Citizen, Ralph Nader, and we will discuss how comedians today provide better news coverage than network TV anchors. KPFK is a media sponsor of this year's political comedy show, Stand Up for Main Street, hosted by Steve Scroven at the Writers Guild Theatre this Sunday, April the 29th at 6:30 p.m. And joining us now is Amira Woods, who's the co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. She's an expert on U.S. foreign policy with a special emphasis on Africa and the developing world. She was program manager for the Committee on Development Policy and Practice at Interaction, serving as its principal staff contact for advocacy at the United Nations, the International Financial Institutions, USAID, and Treasury. Previous to that, she served as a program officer of Oxfam America's Africa Program. A native Liberia, Amira serves on the board of directors of Global Justice and Financial Policy Forum and is the chair of the board of Africa Action and serves on the advisory committee of the Zimbabwe Alliance as well as the Humanity United Trust Africa Liberia Program. Welcome to Background Briefing, Amira Woods.
It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
And I guess in the case of Charles Taylor here before the International Criminal Court, it's a case of not so much justice denied, but certainly justice delayed, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. Justice delayed, but not denied. It has taken quite some time, but the people of Sierra Leone, the day before their Independence Day, actually, are celebrating because justice has been served. I think the Charles Taylor verdict shows that no one, even a sitting head of state, is above the law.
Well, you mentioned in a piece that you wrote that he's the first head of state. Well, there's a lot of firsts. He's the first head of state to escape from a U.S. medium security prison, the first head of state to publicly refuse to sign an imbalanced rubber concession agreement with Firestone Tire and Rubber, and he's the first sitting head of state to be brought on charges for international crimes against humanity, and now, of course, the first head of state since World War II to have been convicted of war crimes by an international criminal court. Let's deal with the escape from a prison in Boston. Can you sketch that first out for us?
Well, that's the irony here. You know, Charles Taylor was the finance minister of a previous government in Liberia, escaped allegedly with about 900,000 U.S. in cash to the United States, and was detained in a medium security prison in Massachusetts, allegedly to be extradited back to Liberia. But somehow, it's quite clear, Charles Taylor on the stand under oath in The Hague testified that with support of the U.S. CIA, Central Intelligence Agency, that he was able to, quote-unquote, escape that medium security prison in Massachusetts and make his way out of the U.S. onto a plane and into Africa. So it's a sordid story that implicates many, including the U.S., but I think it's also important to underscore that implicated in this quagmire really is also Muammar Gaddafi, the former ruler dictator of Libya, because Charles Taylor, after he left that prison in the United States, somehow ended up in Libya to be armed and trained, along with Fode Sanko from Sierra Leone, essentially trained and financed by Libya, went off to West Africa, where they unleashed a reign of terror that killed 250,000 Liberians and 50,000 Sierra Leoneans. So it's a a long and complex web of atrocities that finally today has been brought to justice.
Well, it's a bit odd, isn't it? Again, I'm speaking with Amira Woods, who is originally from Liberia. She's the co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. It's odd that the CIA would spring Taylor from a jail here in the United States, and that he would then end up working for being an asset of Gaddafi's. You know, and Gaddafi, the reason he was funding Taylor was to beat out Liberia's U.S.-backed dictator Samuel Doe.
Well, that's why I think it's important to recognize that geopolitical, proxies can play dangerous diplomatic dances, right? So you had a very clear indictment and a guilty charge of Taylor, both working towards peace and involving himself in peace negotiations in Sierra Leone, while aiding and abetting the very forces that were undermining peace and orchestrating the repression in Sierra Leone. You also had some duplicitous roles being played. The United States was backing then-dictator in Liberia, Samuel Doe, and he was seen as a friend of the United States, had come to the White House under Ronald Reagan, welcomed in the White House with much fanfare, and was actually supported through military hardware and training by the United States, while at the same time, Charles Taylor was also allowed to, again, by the CIA and others, according to all these reports now and now testimony of Taylor in this trial, the CIA also aided and abetted Taylor. And I think it is that role of these geopolitical actors that is sometimes running amok in crises in Africa and other places around the world.
So, Amira Woods, specifically the charges of the 11 charges today, it wasn't convicted on all of them. They range from murder, rape, sexual violence, the recruitment and use of child soldiers, etc. The bottom line is that he, Taylor, is accused of running a Guns for Diamonds scheme with Diamond Rich, Sierra Leone next door. And he was also, of course, as you mentioned earlier, Gaddafi's proxy. And he met with the head of the IUF, Sanko, where they were both backed by Gaddafi. And, of course, some of this came to light earlier with the gift of Taylor's giving a blood diamond to the supermodel Naomi Campbell. But what went on, what the RUF did in Sierra Leone, along with killing, what was the figure you had, 250,000 died in Liberia because of Taylor's activity. How many died in Sierra Leone?
50,000.
But so what was prevalent there was this amputation. You know, a way to terrorize and recruit child soldiers was they used amputation.
Well, I think there was unspeakable violence, right? So you had women being targeted for sexual rape and sexual violence, also the use of women as sex slaves and cooks and what have you. You also had the targeting of civilians who would not go along with the rebel forces. Were brutalized, and including this massive use of essentially hacking off the limbs of those who refused to join the forces. So civilian targets, I think, were most brutally treated in this war. And I think the verdict of Taylor was that while he did not command and control the forces on the Sierra Leonean side of the border directly, that he did aid and abet. He provided the weapons, the ammunition, the financial backing to ensure that those unspeakable acts continued to unimpeded in many respects in Sierra Leone, and that the flow of diamonds out is very sort of high-quality, high-grade supply of diamonds would continue to flow into his coffers on the Liberia side of the border as well. So this flow, this illicit trade of arms for diamonds, I think, is also a key element of this indictment and why he was actually found guilty.
Again, I'm speaking with Amira Woods, who's originally from Liberia. She's the co-director of Foreign Policy and Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. And curiously enough, his, Taylor's wife, is in the Liberian Parliament. I read something about her recently calling for the execution of homosexuals, something extraordinary like that. There was never any, I mean, he was media savvy. He came across as a sort of cultured, had a kind of sort of British accent, you know. How did this guy get away with it? I mean, there are two questions, really. How did he get away with it for so long? And secondly, was he just an unbelievable sociopath? I mean, what motive, what possible, you know, how could a human being be that depraved?
Well, I think choices are made by people who want power and want to control and access resources. And those choices can be made by someone like Charles Taylor, a very educated, person with economics training, a former finance minister. Those atrocities can also be carried forward by people in wealthy countries, including the United States and the UK and many other places. So I think what we have now is an international community that has put forward standards, new standards, for the 21st century, recognizing that we need new mechanisms of accountability and really creating, 10 years ago now, this International Criminal Court. I think our challenge is to make sure that the rules of the road apply to all and not only bring forward indictments and charges on people in the African on the African continent, but that to make sure that all of the international community, all who violate human rights, international law, international humanitarian law, human dignity, are held accountable, whether they come from the United States, the UK, or China, or Russia, or anywhere else on this planet.
Well, you mentioned, we talked earlier about how Taylor, as a head of state, publicly refused to sign an imbalanced rubber concession agreement with Firestone Tire and Rubber. Interestingly enough, the country, of course, Liberia, was founded by freed American slaves, and one of the main American pioneers, if you will, of Liberia was Marcus Garvey, who created a shipping line and got people to sign up and emigrate to Liberia, and he bought enormous amounts of land in Liberia. And then, of course, the Americans were always looking for a way to break the British and French rubber trust, and then they discovered that you could actually grow rubber in Liberia. So Firestone Tire and Rubber used a J. Edgar Hoover to bring charges against Marcus Garvey for alleged Ponzi scheme, and therefore have the whole plan of Garvey's collapse, and then Firestone Tire and Rubber ended up with all this land on which they grew rubber.
Well, clearly Firestone has a sordid history in Liberia. Liberia remains the largest rubber operations in the world. And Firestone started in 1926 and has built their profits on the backs of farmers who were dispossessed of their lands. For Firestone to have that million acres on which they planted rubber, people were thrown off the land. What many called the first in what has been a long history of land grabs in Liberia and other African countries, began then with Firestone and its efforts to control the rubber market. But I think, what's worse is that you have had continuing till now, the 21st century, the use of child labor on those plantations. They're still called plantations because actually they are built on a system designed in the antebellum South, where the Liberians are primarily the laborers living in dilapidated housing, some of which was built back in 1926, and even the ones that were more recently built still have no indoor plumbing, no indoor lighting or electricity. Essentially taking the models that were constructed in 1926 and having two rooms instead of one, but very little other changes. So rendering the workers invisible.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Amira Woods.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you.
Again, I've been speaking with Amira Woods, who co-directs the Foreign Policy in Focus at the Institute for Policy Studies. She's a native of Liberia and serves on the board of directors of Global Justice and the Financial Policy Forum, and is chair of the board of Africa Action, and serves on the advisory committee of the Zimbabwe Alliance, as well as the Humanity United Trust Africa Liberia Project. We're going to take a brief station break, and we'll be back talking about student loans with the president barnstorming around the country. Killed the Tsar and its ministers, Anastasia screamed in vain. I rode a tank, held a generous rank, when the blitz.